Rebecca?
Hi, I just came on. He's not on yet.
All right, thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We are beginning section 13 on Parashah Lech Lecha. We'll start with Pasuk 106. And I'll start with the L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud Kodesha Barichu Ishkin Tebid Hiluurchimu Hiluud Hiluurchimu Reaktam L'shem Yehud Bavavhe Yehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vayehino Amadunai Elohim Aleinu Ma'aseh Yadenu Kenenei Aleinu Ma'aseh Yadenu Kenenei Aleinu Pasuk 106. Vayered Avram Mitzrayma Lagur Sham Mem Tet L'Mitzrayim Ela Begin D'Shakil L'Gan Hashem Diktiv K'Gan Hashem K'Eretz Mitzrayim The Taman Shakil Venachet Tad Nechara Ve'ihu Yamina Diktiv Shem Ha'echad Hisham Hu Hasovev Et Kol Eretz Ahavila Asher Sham Chazchaz. The translation. And Avram went down to Egypt to sojourn there. Why did he go down to Egypt? Because it looked like the Garden of Hashem, namely the Garden of Eden, as it is written. Like the Garden of Hashem, like the land of Egypt. Because a river flows down on the right, as it is written, the name of the first is Pishon. That is it which encompasses the whole land of Havilah, where there is gold. My commentary. Gold is a left column material. Havilah, or Egypt, as perceived by Abraham, has the Nile River on the right. Is the river Pishon the Nile River? Has to be contemplated by all students of Kabbalah. Questions, comments, thoughts?
I wasn't familiar with the name Havilah as the name for Egypt.
Brandela.
Welcome.
Hello.
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 The answer to Hannah is normally, you don't think of Havilah as the land of Egypt. But here we're being told that the Nile River is connected to the river Pishon, and the land of Havilah, which is gold, connects to that river of Pishon, which is the first river that comes out of the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And another thought is that where do we find a lot of gold mines in the world? You find it in South Africa.
Right.
And the Nile River starts close to South Africa and flows northward. So maybe the land of Havilah is South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least Southern Africa. That's why my comment was saying that we need to understand which one it is, or maybe it's a different one.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts, or should I go on?
Well, I always took it to be a different one, you know, and I think I had a different view of Egypt, you know, as not being so beautiful that you'd associate the Garden of Eden with it, but that could be preconceived impressions from, you know, the years of...
The word Egypt, Mitzrayim, as we know, means narrow or limited.
Right.
But the whole idea of the, you know, essentially the physical world, all of the physical world is Egypt. We're told by the modern Kabbalists that we're presently living in America. You're in the modern day Egypt.
Right.
So, you know, you can't just assume that it's this idea of Egypt being, you know, next to the Yam Suf or the Suez Canal or any of that. You have to, you know, remember the 70 different explanations. You have to kind of think them through. Anybody else have any comments?
Didn't he go down to Egypt because there was a famine?
Abraham, yes. Isaac,
okay.
No. Jacob? No, well, yes and no. Egypt was the land of gold. All the gold of the world had been transferred to Egypt when Joseph was sold into slavery there.
If gold is such a valued mineral, why is it a left column and, you know, silver being right column? I never have quite understood that when we were in the half shekel bit. That's, I think, when we learned in our classes about gold being right column, left column, and silver being right column.
What is the color of silver?
Silver.
Well, it tends to be, silver tends to be a light color, a white color.
Mm-hmm.
Silver is white.
Oh, and gold, when it's melted, is red. God should, yes, exactly. I remember. Right. When he made the children drink the gold after the golden calf. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense.
Verse 107.
Let me ask one other question before you go on about the gold.
No problem.
Is wearing gold jewelry to be frowned upon?
God forbid a man should ever tell a woman never to wear gold jewelry.
Okay, I didn't hear you. Would you repeat that? I really didn't hear you. I put the phone down.
I know. Understood.
And right then I didn't hear it.
God forbid that a man should ever tell a woman, do not wear any gold jewelry.
Okay.
The answer to your question is, why do women wear gold jewelry? What's the consciousness you have when you put on a gold jewelry, a gold necklace, a pearl necklace, a diamond ring? What's your consciousness?
I don't know. I guess beauty, richness.
There are many different possibilities. If you're putting on your wedding band or your engagement ring, you're doing so to announce to the world that about your love between your spouses. If you're putting on a gold necklace, you're doing so to attract attention is one possibility. Or you're doing so to flaunt your wealth is another possibility. Or you're doing so because you think it's pretty and it enhances your beauty. Depends on your consciousness, and everybody has a different set of consciousnesses. So, when you put on a piece of gold, what is your consciousness? I didn't mention any sharing consciousness when I was saying the different consciousness, but you can have a sharing consciousness. I'm putting the gold on to impress somebody so that I would be, he'll listen more to my ideas and I'll be more sharing with that person. You can have many different consciousnesses. And depending on the consciousness you have when you put the jewelry on, that's what it takes. And we've studied that women tend to be more connected to the left column, and thus a man tends to provide these gold jewelry to his spouse or his girlfriend, and he's doing so to make the connection.
Is there also a connection to the jeweler who's making the jewelry? I'm thinking in terms of Star Davids and Highs and, you know, what we call Judaic jewelry, with the consciousness of making money.
Correct. Then that's what's injected into the jewelry. And that's why that jewelry attracted the person who bought it. You have to always remember, you know, you go into the furniture store and buy a couch. You didn't buy the couch. The couch bought you. The couch sent out a message to your soul that said, I want to share my ability for you to sit down with you. And so this couch was built for you. But if the person making the couch was only doing it for making money, it will affect the consciousness of the couch. And it will attract a person who's more inclined to be making money or displaying wealth than if it takes the other one. Which comes first, the question or the answer? You know the answer to that is that the answer comes first. It wants to be revealed. And that applies to things that we purchase. We're not purchasing it because we want them. We're purchasing it because they want to utilize or to provide sharing consciousness or sharing actions with us. And that's why we purchase it.
I've had that happen with antique furniture. I passed by a piece. I don't shop anymore for that, but when I did, I'd pass by these different pieces, and it was odd. You know, like the hair on the back of my neck would stand up, or if it was like a chiffon robe, the door would open, or, you know, something. And eventually, sometimes I would buy the piece, and sometimes I wouldn't. But I guess that was a sharing consciousness of the furniture or who had it before.
What if the opposite is true? You see a chiffon robe and you see that it's got one door that's not even, and you think to yourself, oh, you could take that home and fix that easily and it would look so much better. That's almost a different consciousness. Go ahead.
I was going to tell you, in Japanese art, anything that has an imperfection is not considered an imperfection.
Well, if the door won't close, it's an imperfection.
Well, maybe you don't need that piece of furniture. It's not for you.
Well, if it was the only one that matched your bedroom suit and you had been to every furniture in the store in Lake Charles, well, you would say, well, okay, I can fix this one. We'll fix it, won't we? And of course, Tony said, sure, I can do that. And I've never regretted it. It went with me to Israel and back. So, you know, oh, well, that's enough. We got our point across. All part of the joke too.
Correct.
Yeah.
When you have the thought to fix something because it's going to make it better for more people to utilize it, you're affecting the consciousness of the item. You're modifying it. You're having impact on it. But it doesn't change it completely. It just makes it more sharing than it was. But it doesn't make it completely sharing.
Well, it's in the bedroom for company, you know, for my guests. So it shares. and it holds the TV, and it holds some other things of Hanukkah candles, and the drawer that holds tablecloths, you know, those plastic sheets you put over your table.
Yeah.
You know, so it's doing a good job. So in this particular verse, contemplating whether the null is part of the Pashan is an important nugget from that verse, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we're going to stop here. We have a few more minutes, so we won't get enough to really go into the whole verse. So.
Yeah, it looks like it's a big one. Of course, it's a lot of Rabbi Ashlag's capital letters. So.
Right.
Okay.
So, I expect we'll have class tomorrow, but not Thursday.
Okay.
So you all have a good evening, and our 7 o'clock class tonight is Tikkuni Zohar.
Okay.
Shalom to all.
Thank you.
Shalom,
Brandy.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Hello.